Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Brazilian Parasite.
Primetime with Isaac and Zoo.
Can build cities. Can transform the world. And rewrite all the rules.
That's what I'll be doing every single night.
Which is why...
No!
I have to steal it.
What are you talking about, Willis?
This is Primetime with Isaac and Zoo.
It's going to work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The best in local, regional, and national sports.
With no hidden agenda.
Primetime with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
All right, it's 404 on The Fan. In the news is coming up. But I tell you, that Mike, he's talented. You know, Mike's a big Yankee fan.
Yeah.
And he's watching the Yankees lose to the Astros right now. And there was some significant stuff going down right as Mike was reading you that sports snort.
Had to try to keep it together.
And I looked over at him, and he was reading, but also watching the game. And you probably were none the wiser out there in radio land.
Well, they had the Astros had the bases loaded with one out, and Britton bounced one a foot in front of the catcher. It went over the top of his shoulder and hit the ump.
And this, oh, yeah, that, right.
Yeah. It
hit, Mike wasn't on the air for that one.
No, and it hit the ump, and so no one was able to advance. And then two pitches later.
No, the very next pitch.
Was it the very next pitch?
It was the very next pitch.
Britton did it again, bounced one in the exact same spot, this time skipped over the catcher and the ump, and it brought a run in.
And I think this was happening as Mike was telling you about some stupid trade or something.
Yeah.
That happened when I was telling you about the NLCS game four tonight, the pass ball. And then the sack fly happened when I was telling you about Oregon State landing the basketball commit today.
So it's such a pro.
So it's 4-0 now going into what, bottom of seven?
Bottom seven. Yeah. Well, crazier things have happened, but I'm very frustrated right now.
It's hard to say that. I mean, you can't really say that they haven't had their opportunities.
No.
They've had seven runners stranded or nine runners
stranded. Nine or more, no.
And it's against Garrett Cole, who just...
Mike just sounds so... Mike, cheer up. It's okay. You're in the ALCS. A lot can happen. Let's do this.
A lot can happen, yes.
He sounds so... God. He sounds so depressed.
I know. Look,
come on, man. Let's get fired up.
When your team is losing after straining nine runners on base...
Let's do this.
Let's very get
important.
Fired up.
We are fired up. Oh, wait. We don't want the Yankees to win.
No.
Actually, that's not true. I'd like to root for Mike... I'm torn. I like the Astros. I think the Astros are fun. Mm-hmm. That's an exciting team. So I like them, but I also am rooting for Mike. Now, not necessarily for the Yankees.
See, normally I would support Mike whatever sort of sports venture he had. I'll root for the Broncos. I'll root for the Orange. I can't do it. Can't root for the
Yankees.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I can't blame you for that.
But it bothers me because I don't want to root for Houston because that's not only Dusty, but it's that bandwagon Officer Potter.
Yeah.
And all his sports douchiness, and then so that hurts too. So I'm in a no-win situation here because I hate the Nationals.
The way that I look at it is I wasn't expecting to beat Garrett Cole, so if they lose this game, then it's kind of like, well, okay, it was kind of expected. Just the way it happened is very frustrating if they wind up losing.
They'll probably win. All right, cue the music there, Maestro. You get back to your game. Good luck. Mike Leach has imposed a social media ban for his Washington State Cougars.
Of course he has, because that's the reason why they're losing.
Yes.
Well, my.
He says that, I think we entertain too many distractions. And if I had to do it over again, I would have done it when we started camp. But no, I think we entertain too many distractions. I think we're a little too distracted right now, but I think there is a team-wide determination to be less distracted.
I don't know. I'm fascinated by this.
Can you really keep players off of social media, though?
No, you can't. You can say all you want that guys can't tweet or can't be on Instagram or whatever, and they may not be able to post anything, but they're on there. And somehow this is going to keep players focused. This is ridiculous. This is just an old man yelling at the cloud. It kind of
feels like Leach doesn't really know what to do with this team this year.
Well, and the offense has been fine. You know, the offense is great. Their defense isn't very good. The only game that the offense hasn't shown up at was that Utah game. And, you know, Utah makes a lot of people look bad. Go see Oregon State. But, you know, the bottom line is you've lost a close one against UCLA that you had no business losing. You lost a close one against Arizona State. And, you know, it's not going your way. And I do think that Mike Leach is grasping at straws. But I think the defensive coordinator quitting in the middle of the season that to me speaks volumes about where this team's at. And I just think there's a lot of dysfunction right now, and they're trying to figure out an answer.
So they're 0-3 in the league, 3-3 overall.
I still think they're a really dangerous team. I mean, you look at their schedule coming up with Colorado, Oregon, Cal, Stanford, Oregon State, and then obviously the Apple Cup at Washington. When you have an offense that's going to put up 30-plus points a game, dude, there will be a game here, and I don't know if it's Oregon or maybe it's Stanford or Cal. They're going to jump up and bite someone here. This is not a bad Washington State team. It's just a team that on the defensive side of the ball isn't as good as it's been the last couple years, and maybe that's to be expected, that eventually Washington State was going to have a regression after losing, you know, Alex Grinch a couple years ago.
Well, I tell you what, I was watching Oklahoma the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That Alex Grinch,
they're good,
dude. He's Oklahoma's defensive coordinator now. Yeah.
He went to Ohio State and took the co-position, then he left and went to Oklahoma.
He is so good. Yeah. You can see his fingerprints all over Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma's defense is a lot better than it has been years past, and it's because of him. And Washington State had him. But Tracy Clays is good too, but he just stepped down. So
I would love to know. You know, they just said that there were fundamental differences. I would love to know, you know, what exactly went on there. Maybe Mike Leach is just that hard of a guy to work with. I don't know.
All right. Well, they play
Colorado.
They play Colorado this weekend.
That's 50% stupid.
Should be a high scoring game. The over is 71.5. By the way, they got the Cougs favored by 13.5 in this one.
Really, the big game that we need to discuss this week is Oregon-Washington.
Well, I think there's two big games because I think the Pac-12 North and South could be decided this week.
Oregon ranked 12th, Washington ranked 25th. Now, last year, of course, big win for Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Knocking them off. But the Huskies are just 2-2 in the league. So, let's hear from the coaches, shall we?
Let's.
Which coach would you like first?
Let's go with Cristobal, because Chris Peterson never says anything.
Oh, really?
No.
All right. Let me read through here. Ooh, four wide receiver sets?
Yeah.
Cristobal on four wide receiver sets.
Well, it's not really our personality to do that. I think in this league, as many teams that play the odd wide and the odd tight scheme, you could really put yourself in a tough position in terms of running the football if you just try to play without a tight end. That hasn't been our personality. So, you know, it might be a good thing for spring, though.
Yeah, he's talking about, obviously, the injury to Jacob Breland and changing things up. So they're not going to do that. Look, Washington's run defense is not very good. But they're going to stuff the box because they're not going to respect Oregon on the outside. They're going to do exactly what Auburn did.
Mm-hmm. And what Stanford and Cal, look, this is going to come down to, you know, and it's probably going to be a bit of a frustrating game here because, you know, Oregon fans are going to be like, sling it, sling it, sling it. I just don't think there's many guys on the outside that scare Washington. They have a good secondary. And I do. I think Washington is going to play up in their face. They're going to go bump and run. They're going to get physical with Oregon's receivers. And they're going to try to stop Oregon's ability to run. I think the game, that is the number one key for Washington, is going to be stopping Oregon's run.
Well, they look like they always look. Like really big and powerful guys up front on both sides of the ball. A lot of talent all over the field, is as talented as a team as you'll see in the country, and very well coached. So certainly, you know, an opportunity that our guys are really excited about.
They're not as talented as any team in the country. Let's not go that far.
Yeah, but don't you know, as a head coach, you have to suck up to your opponent?
Yes. And
every week
the defense has been good. It has not been great. But remember, they replaced basically the 9 or 10 starters off of that defense. And so I think what Husky fans are trying to hold on to is that maybe last week against Arizona that you saw the defense grow up a little bit. The defense hasn't been bad. I think they're only giving up, it's like 11 or 12 points a game. Or no, excuse me, Oregon has given up like 9 or 10 points. And Washington has given up, I think, somewhere in the teens. It's the number one and number two scoring defenses in the conference. Washington's has been good. It's just not quite up to their standards. And then we've also seen teams be able to run. Cal and Stanford both kind of got physical in, and they haven't been able to come up with that big stop when they need it. So I think what, if you're a Washington fan, what you're hoping for is that as this young defense goes along, that it's going to grow up because it's so new and it's so young. They went through some growing pains, but you know, maybe that game against Arizona, who's a pretty good offensive team, maybe that was the one that kind of the coming out party, but Oregon's going to test you.
Over-under on this is 50.5, yeah, which is interesting.
It's going to be a low-scoring game.
Because the Ducks... Okay, so here's a couple betting stats for you on this game. The Ducks games have gone under. This is their last 16 road games. They've gone under 12-3-1 against the spread.
12-3-1 going under?
Under.
Yeah.
Yeah, in other words, they've gone under the total 12 of the last 16 road games Oregon has.
Well, and I think they're going to be real conservative in a hostile environment. I also think that this is really going to play into Oregon's hands with what they want to do and run the ball and kind of play a muddled up game. Is I don't think that Oregon's defense is going to be scared by anything Washington does offensively. And so I don't think that Cristobal is going to have any incentive to open this thing up. I think if you told him that you're going to play a game in the low 20s and in the teens and it's just going to be a physical game, he'll take it all day long. He's going to trust his defense, and he believes that his offensive line will wear down this Washington team. And we saw Stanford and Cal both do this in the second half where they pushed Washington around. I promise you, when Oregon's watching film, they believe that if this thing goes into the fourth quarter, it's a close game, that front of Oregon's will be the difference in this
game.
Well,
I think that's great. I mean, that's SEC style, man. That's kind of the style that he brought. And this is exactly what Oregon fans wanted when they were getting their teeth kicked in by the bigger, stronger, more physical, more talented big boys of college football the last several years, right? Yeah. This is what you wanted.
This is
Now they're built just like that. And that is that travels. It you know, you're going on the road, hostile environment against a rival. That's a tough game. But one thing you can always count on in an environment like that is a stingy fly around defense. And
Oregon has it.
Oregon absolutely has it. So do they have to outscore them by, I mean, do they have to score 30, 35 to win the game? Absolutely not. Well, and that makes you a little more nervous, but who cares? You win the game. That's all you need to do is win and advance.
And
that is it.
And at this point, I mean, I don't know how he can make it. Cristobal doesn't sugarcoat anything. I don't know how much clearer he can be to the fans. They're not going to be a super high-powered offense.
No.
I mean, you play the Colorados of the world, and clearly you've got an opportunity there to blow those out. But when you play better teams, Oregon is not built right now to be a team that is going to outscore you. It's not the game they want to go into. Even with the injuries at tight end, you heard him say it. He's like, yeah, we're not going to open things up. We're going to go tight end. And why did he talk about going to tight end? Because he doesn't want to negatively affect the run game. For better or worse, you can like it or not, that man is determined to run the ball at all cost.
Here's Peterson on Oregon's defense.
Starts with good players. You know, they got some guys back there that have played for now a couple, 2-3 years. I think Andy's doing a great job. You know, I've known Andy for a long time, and he's an awesome coach. He's got those guys very dialed. I think they're, you know, so it starts there, and then their pass rush, you know, they're a physical group. You know, they just work like they're a rugged group. You know, even if you're blocking them, they keep working. And they got some guys that, you know, have a lot of skill. So it kind of all fits together. I mean, you got to have it hand in hand. If you're going to have a good pass coverage, they can't hold the ball forever. And you can't hold the ball on these guys.
Yeah, Oregon's pass defense. You know, if you want to look at one specific thing about Oregon's really stout defense so far, is their pass defense numbers are as elite as you can get.
Yeah, I think I'm looking here. They're only giving up 160 a game. And to put that in perspective, I mean, Cal, Washington, Utah all have really good defenses. I mean, those are like in the low 200s. Oregon's at 160 a game. And they're only giving up, I think, 107. And they're, 9 points or something like that per game. The defense has been insane. The only thing that would scare me is there is a little bit of that. Can it barely be this good? That's the only thing. As you look at it, you say eventually, right, they have to come back down to earth. Are they really this good? But so far, outside of the second half against Auburn, they have really not been challenged. And what happened in the second half against Auburn is I just think physically that they got beat up, and I think they played it too close to the vest. what I hope doesn't happen at some point is the Oregon offense kind of doing like what they did against Cal and Stanford and just being very conservative and keep giving other teams possessions. I hope that doesn't come back and bite you in a close contest, because I do think that's what happened against Auburn, because the offense couldn't convert on third down and they were like, well, we're just going to keep playing defense, keep running the ball, be conservative. Eventually, you gave the ball to Auburn enough times where they were able to break through, and I do think that the Oregon defense got a little tired, because if you want to nitpick the defense at all, I think that depth still may be one of those things that you could look at and say it's probably not exactly where you want it.
Washington 8-2 against the spread in their last 10 games. Oregon on the road, just 3-7 against the spread in their last 10 games. Washington is the underdog here by 2.5 points, so it's a slight margin, but Washington is 0-4 against the spread as a home underdog in this series. All right, let's look at the rest of college football when we get back.
And all I'm asking for, just two times, play action and throw over the top. Just
right.
Humor
right.
me. Humor me and run Micah Pittman on a go route and just put one up and tell Herbert, all right? It either our guy catches it or you throw it 8 yards out of the back of the end zone, but at least make...
Throw it like that Hail Mary.
Yes, at least make Washington's safeties... That's a good one, by the way. Make Washington's safeties respect our ability to throw the ball deep, and I think that'll loosen up the run game a little bit.
All right, let's look around the rest of college football this weekend. Coming up next on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, for more on Oregon, Washington, we will have Dave Bartu on tomorrow at 3:30, College Football Matrix. And then on Friday, we'll have Colin Wilson, our college football gambling expert from the Action Network, and then Joey Harrington in studio on Friday. So we've got a lot to cover with Oregon and Washington throughout the rest of the week.
And then on the other side of things, like with Washington, they've got a little bit of what Oregon had last year with the drops. I think they had 5 or 6 against Cal and Stanford. And Washington's offense isn't that dynamic to begin with, but when you're having big drops and your margin for error is really thin, it derails an offense. And like I said, I think Oregon had this problem last year, and I think Washington's going through it right now, where you know your receivers just haven't been good enough. And so, much like I said, I don't think Washington is going to respect Oregon's passing game. I don't think Oregon's going to respect Washington's very much either. And so, again, I think both teams are going to try to establish the run in this and try to be the more physical team. And I do think that, to me, that leans towards an advantage for Oregon.
Well, the other Pac-12 game that you were referencing last segment that could decide the South is number 17 Arizona State at number 13 Utah.
Yeah, and
both 5-1.
Both 5-1. I think that the North one is a little closer than this. If and Utah may have fooled me, but Utah to me looks right now to be the part, and I think Arizona State is. I think they're a bit of a pretender. I do think that Jaden Daniels finally had a game against Washington State where I thought he was impressive. Now, maybe that's because Washington State's defense isn't that good, but I just don't think over the course of the year he's been that good. I think there's a lot of hype there, and he's a guy that runs around and makes plays with his legs. I actually thought he threw the ball really well against Washington State, and Arizona State has been in every game that they've played. They're 5-1, and their only loss was the close one against Colorado, but they had a 3-point win against Michigan State. They pulled one out against Cal, and even Washington State, they came from 10 back and went on a last-second drive. I don't know if Arizona State has the physical guys up front, either side of the ball, to hang with Utah. But, you know, you can't write off Arizona State because, again, they keep proving people wrong. But I do think the rubber meets the road in this. And Utah's defense and the fact that Utah has figured out how to throw the ball, I think they're going to overwhelm Arizona State. I really like Utah in this. And if you look at the spread, I think Vegas does too. They're 2 touchdown favorites. And these are two teams that both have 1 loss, and it's 13 and 17 in the country. But if you've watched Utah and Arizona State play, I think it's easy for me to say that Utah is the much better team, whereas Oregon-Washington to me seems to be a little more even.
Arizona State does have 2 big road wins already. They won at Michigan State, and they won at Cal.
Yep.
So that game, so the Oregon-Washington game is at 12:30 on ABC, game is at, let me find out where that stupid game is. I think they're actually putting that one on Pac-12 Network, aren't they?
They might be.
Yeah, it is. Pac-12 Network at 3 o'clock.
Take out Kent and Sacramento State, whatever. the you look at the Arizona State schedule here. These are the win or loss. This is their point differential. 3-3-7-4. I mean, this is Arizona State.
You know what that means?
They play an NFL style game where Herm believes whatever the style, we can match it. We're not going to beat ourselves. We're going to be conservative. We're going to hang in there, get into the fourth quarter, and I trust my guys in a one score game.
Here's what that means.
Football's football.
What that means.
I just think this football's is a step up football. In competition.
Football is football.
And like I think Utah is going to beat them by 2 touchdowns. I do.
Well, we'll see.
And Arizona State has proven me wrong so many times. I feel like Utah really grabs a hold of the Pac-12 South in this one, and shows Arizona State that there's a difference between being a good team winning close games and a team that I think is really rounded into form in Utah.
Friday game this week is No. 4 Ohio State at Northwestern. Northwestern sucks this year. They're 1-4, and they lost to Stanford.
Yeah.
So probably not a lot of friction for Ohio State, but typically that's a tough trip.
Yeah, let's just fast forward. I think it's 3-4 weeks now, but we need Ohio State, Wisconsin, because right now that's what I want to see in the Big Ten.
Now, here's an interesting one. Clemson, if you're an Oregon fan, you want Clemson out of there.
Yeah.
And they're undefeated. They're on the road at Louisville, and all of a sudden Louisville's 4-2, and their coach, Satterfield's getting a lot of buzz.
He's the guy from App State. And they lost a close one against Florida State, and then they beat Boston College, and then they actually beat a ranked Wake Forest team, and they don't play a lot of defense, but they can score points in bunches. In fact, that game against Wake Forest was 62-59.
So I would say upset alert there, but the spread's 24, although we did see South Carolina with that same spread beat Georgia at Georgia last week.
Well, North Carolina gave Clemson all they could handle, went for 2 and didn't get it.
Oklahoma's 5. They host West Virginia. Wisconsin is at Illinois. Now, Florida goes on the road to play South Carolina. South Carolina just beat Georgia at Georgia, so maybe a tough spot for Florida. We'll have to wait and see. Auburn is at Arkansas. Really, Oregon-Washington is one of the bigger games in the country this week. The only other game outside of that that is worth mentioning is Michigan and Penn State, which is 16 Michigan at 7 Penn State.
Yeah. By the way, the over-under on that is 45. That thing could be played. I'll take the under. That thing's going to be played in the teens.
Alabama's playing Tennessee, but, I mean, that's, you know.
Keep an eye on this one, too.
Tennessee's not any good.
Boise State, who is trying to make it. They're undefeated right now, 14th in the country. They're trying to make it to one of the New Year's Six Bowls. They got BYU at BYU. And, you know, some of the shines come off of the Cougs a little bit. I think they're 2-4 now. That early part of the season kind of beat them up a little bit. But it could be a test for Boise State here to try to keep them out of a New Year's Six Bowl.
Baylor is 6-0. Everybody loves Matt Rhule. And they're on the road at Oklahoma State. We'll find out if Baylor's for real.
They had a close one last week against Texas Tech.
They pulled it out.
They squeezed out by a point or two.
The other thing, too, LSU goes on the road. See, again, these games are all like, nah, they're just not. I mean, somebody's going to go down probably, but LSU's at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
And Mississippi State's 3-3.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't seem the part of an interesting game, but who would have thought that South Carolina and Georgia would have been? And that was at Georgia, if I'm not mistaken.
All right. Well, there's your jamboree, damn it. Coming up next, I've got more Blockbuster Video news.
Really?
Yeah, really.
2 days in a row.
That's right. Back-to-back days. And we'll talk about urban falconry.
Well, we've had falconry talk on the program before.
But now we're doing urban falconry.
As opposed to the country falconry.
What do you think this means?
Two totally different things.
We'll get to that next. But first, let's go to Sad Yankee Mike with SportsCenter.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, guys. It is 4:36, and you know what time it is.
Well, you just told me, so.
Yeah, I did. I don't even have to say it, do I?
Well, you just did, so now I know that it's 4:36. According to my clock, it's actually 4:35. But
it is October 15th, 2019. It's time for the news! Yeah! Your noted newsman over here. I'm trying to lead Mike to brighter days. He's just not following my lead.
No.
I'm trying to be upbeat for him.
He's depressed.
He just is so sad in there. Look, it's not your day, okay? tomorrow. Get rained out.
They got one more inning.
Everybody can go get drunk together. All the Yankee guys, you know.
You like to drink? I like to drink.
I drink the whole show.
And then the next game, Tanaka will pitch, and it will be great, and it will be tied 2-2, and yeah, you'll have him right where you want him.
Yeah, split in Houston, you know, get a split in New York, it'll be fine.
Well, there's three games in New York. I'd like to take 2 of 3.
Oh, is it 2-3-2?
Yes. I'd like to take 2 of 3 and then go back to Houston and up 3-2, but we're down 2-1, so that's a far, far way away at this point. Well, we're not down yet. Ninth inning start.
4-1.
4-1.
It is National Cheese Curd Day. Do you like a good cheese curd?
I'm not against a cheese curd, but I wouldn't say that I'm a huge fan. But you know, if I'm in Canada, get some of that poutain and like it,
or Wisconsin,
get some squeaky cheese curds from Tillamook, just down the road. Not just down the road, but
yeah, it's a little further away than down the road.
Hour away, hour and a half, however long it takes. Yeah.
Now it is also National Face Your Fears Day. Jace.
Oh.
JC baby. So okay. What do you think? What does that mean for you? What would we need to do today for you to
face my fears?
Face your fear.
Gosh. Fear. I don't particularly like clowns. I don't know if that's a fear, but they make me mildly uncomfortable. Tigers, lions, big cats, things of that nature. Don't want to get mauled by one of those.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so I don't really feel like facing any of those. I don't feel like I have irrational fears. I feel like I have real fears that I don't want to, like plane crashes. Like, I don't want to face that fear. You gotta, like, right. I'm going to go up in a plane and then, yeah. Like, they, hey, crash it so I can overcome that?
Just keep fearing that.
No. I feel like most of my fears are legit, like warranted. No.
The lack of the...
you all right?
The last Blockbuster. You know, yeah. We talked about that, yeah, where Ron Howard visited... Ron Howard was there yesterday.
Did Ron
over
Howard,
the weekend.
Did Ron Howard's brother Clint Howard show up?
No one cares about him.
Really? Clint Howard's a big deal.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he is.
What did he do?
He's been in like... that guy is one of the most recognizable character actors of all time.
Let me look at him.
And it says something about this, that he's the ugly one in the family, because Ron Howard is not attractive. But then you see Clint Howard and you're like, Ron's
that's Clint Howard?
That's Clint Howard. He's been in a ton of stuff.
I know him.
Yeah.
He has a big forehead.
He just shows... Bill Murray's brothers kind of has that same thing going on for himself. He just shows up in a lot of Bill Murray's movies, and you're like, oh, that's his brother.
Well, Ron was out there visiting the last standing Blockbuster brick-and-mortar store. And then I read this. So we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah.
Now I read that there is a last Blockbuster documentary that will be released next year.
Really?
Yeah, these two guys, Taylor and Zeke.
Do we really need a documentary on the last Blockbuster?
They're from Bend. They're a couple of Bend bros.
Okay.
And they're putting the finishing touches on a two-year documentary process. The goal, they said, was for the film to come out and be available for rent at the last Blockbuster. That's what they want.
Yeah.
Which is actually going to happen. It's going to be next year. So while filming... Because, like I said, it's been a two-year process. So while they've been filming it, the other remaining stores have all closed, which makes Ben the very last one. So they said that has absolutely changed the dynamic of the film. But they say it's very uplifting because we all have the common experience of renting movies every Friday night or whatever, you know?
Actually, we don't. If you're under the age of 30, you don't have that common experience.
Well, yeah, he said you have to be of a certain age. But yeah. Come on, we all have that.
Sure.
Those fond memories. And, of course, it talks a lot about that kind of thing. And it has celebrities in there telling their stories of that. And it also talks about why Blockbuster ultimately failed and how this little one in Bend outlasted the others.
Well, John Oliver tried to save the one in... There was one in Alaska. It might have been in Anchorage. And remember, he bought Russell Crowe's jockstrap.
Yeah, that's in Bend now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, they moved it because the Alaska one closed.
The Alaska one closed. John Oliver tried to save that one and it failed. So now I can go to the Bend one and look at... The jockstrap from Cinderella Man?
That's where Ron Howard posted a picture right in front of
the jock.
Russell Crowe's bulge.
It's a good movie, by the way, Cinderella Man.
Hey,
worth,
the waves
worth checking out.
The waves are growing out on the Oregon coast. You know, that's the water, the ocean, you know that.
Is that big water?
Big water, ocean water.
Wet water?
Up to 20 feet by the weekend. Now, this time last year, they were crazy. They were up to 60 feet.
Good Lord.
And wreaking havoc out there. So be careful, kids, if you're dipping your toes in the water out there.
Seems a bit much to go out and splash around in. And you can do whatever you want, but 60-foot waves? Yeah, I'm going to say no to that.
Have you been reading about the bottle drop burglar?
I have seen the bottle drop burglar.
Now, he just looks like a bro.
Yeah.
Now, this is one where he does not look like he's straight out of Central Casting.
No. Most of the time in these stories, I do feel like we look at that and be like, how did we not catch him? You could have seen him and like, yes, you're committing this crime.
So we're finding out more about this guy, and he's just a regular looking dude. His name's Brett McQuiston, and he has been sentenced to 5 years in prison because he was stealing money from bottle drop spots at like Freddy's and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, we're learning that, now he's 34 years old and he has admitted it, but we're learning why. He says that he netted at least $30,000 in cash from the robberies, and he spent most of the stolen money at the Alinea Casino up in Ridgefield. he was up there betting.
Had a bit of a gambling problem, and he found a creative way to take care of that. He also drove a green Hummer, so...
Well, he said he bought it with that money.
He should go to prison just for driving a military green Hummer, you douche.
Yeah, you don't really need a Hummer H3,
no.
Do you? Like... $30,000, by the way. I don't think $30,000 buys you a Hummer H3.
I think it does now because like no one's buying. I don't think they held their value very well. That's probably like a 2004 H3.
Well, he managed to keep enough of the loot to buy a Hummer H3. He was arrested September 5th after a security guard saw a man wearing a ski mask and carrying a crowbar at the bottle drop on Beaverton Hillsdale Highway. So they ran after him and caught him. And so he's going to do 5 years.
No, you would think that that's kind of silly and dumb, but then you read like 34,000. Because when I first saw that those were being broken into, I was
like, that's a lot more than you would think, right?
I did. I was like, what's he coming away with? Just some quarters and whatnot? And then you're like, wow, $30,000. Yeah, he can't do that. And see you later.
Yeah, 5 years. All right. Let's talk about urban falconry when we come back. We also have very big Oregon owl news.
Ooh.
Yes, a lot of controversy out there.
I'm here to tell you right now that my bird of
choice
about
the owl
is the owl.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you ever seen an owl's like legs?
That's a weird question. No, I have not.
Owls have really long legs. They're just covered.
Yeah, because they're wrapped around the tree branch.
No. The feathers. Like you, if you take an owl and you can like move its feathers, they have really long legs.
I'm gonna Google
this.
It's
the damnedest thing. I love owls.
Owl legs.
Yes.
Do we eat owl legs?
Owl legs like uncovered.
Oh yeah, they do, don't they?
Check that out, huh?
Huh.
We were up at Skamania Lodge once, and they had a little like a. I don't know what they call like a presentation out on the lawn, and they had owls out there that you could like hang out with and play. And I was wearing the little mitt and the owl was on there and the guy goes, hey, check this out. And he lifted up the feathers and I was like, oh my God, it's like he's got long legs.
Yeah. It kind of looks like they could just start like running a 5K.
Yeah. Got little spindly bird legs.
Hey, we now know, by the way, I've got a little sports note to sneak in our next segment, but you have to wait.
Okay.
We now know why the Rams traded Marcus Peters today.
Yes.
Because they have made another trade, and we'll tell you who they got. Coming up next, 444 on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, we shall return to regularly scheduled programming in a moment with hot urban falconry talk. But real quick, the sports note that I teased is that the Rams are trading for Jalen Ramsey, the Jags corner.
Yeah, they dealt Marcus Peters earlier in the day, and everyone thought that this could be a precursor to the Jalen Ramsey deal, and here you go.
Yeah, because why would they deal Marcus Peters, even though he's on the last year of his rookie deal, when Aqib Talib just went on the IR?
Yeah.
Well, it's because they are upgrading to Jalen Ramsey, and it looks like the Jags are going to get two first-round picks, one in 2020 and another in 2021, and then also a fourth-round pick in the deal.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is a steep, steep price to pay, but, you know, the Rams have shown a willingness to go all in, right? They think they're in this window where you're pushing all the chips to the middle and trying to get one as soon as possible, and this only furthers that.
All right, today, trained hawks will be released in downtown Portland to help curb the population of roosting crows.
Ooh, kick ass. Bird crime?
Yeah, this will be the third year of the organization's Downtown Portland Clean and Safe. And Integrated Avian Solutions team up to use hawks to abate crows. Now, the crows are kind of bastards. You know, they're real smart.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, you see them.
Crows use tools?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they play Scrabble, too. Yeah, did you know that?
They're quite crafty.
Yeah, crows are good.
And more importantly, a group of them is called a murder, which is the most badass term for a group of animals.
Well, crows have a natural fear of raptors, like hawks and falcons. They don't like them.
It makes sense. It's like me having a natural fear of Brock Lesnar, right? I would assume that it's the same sort of thing.
So what they're going to do is they're going to unleash these badass raptors, and they're going to police the area.
Now, do the raptors kill the crows?
No.
The crows just...
They just leave.
What happens if the crows don't? Do they get roughed up?
Then you got a war.
Then the raptors are like, all right, let's do this.
And we all know who's going to win that war, which is why the crows are smart. They just leave.
What if
they're like, fine.
What if what happens, though, is the crows eventually just get together again, the murder of crows, and they're like, fine, let's do this. There's more of us than there are of you.
Oh.
And then we team up.
Yeah,
Then we've got wars in the sky.
They
wars,
could.
Rob.
That would be bad.
Or the raptors side with the crows, and then we're all screwed.
See, the crows are smart because they know that the raptors won't be there permanently.
Yeah.
They know
that.
We'll
leave
so like,
for a
oh,
while.
Here they go again throwing these raptors at us. All right, guys, let's go south for a bit.
And then eventually
we'll be back in a couple months.
Yeah, and then they'll be gone, and then they just mosey their way back through. I didn't know there was a crow problem, to be honest with you.
You didn't?
No.
Yeah.
Did you? Do you walk around and like, damn, crows?
Sometimes I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like, God, stupid crows. Get out of here.
Can't say I've noticed.
Well, this reduces the number of crows in the district, and it cuts down on the amount of waste that they leave behind because, you know, they poop everywhere.
Yeah. I always thought that was more of a pigeon thing.
Well, they do, too.
Yeah.
But I think they're, yeah.
Because people don't like the crow, but the pigeon is the rat of the sky. Like, no one has any respect for the pigeon.
What if the crows call in the ravens?
I still
they
think
call in reinforcements.
I think the raptor, you know.
Yeah. It's tough to be. Yeah. Like when you're a bird.
Yeah.
I mean, when they're throwing hawks and raptors at you.
What are you going to do? I guess unless you can recruit the owls. Some of those owls are those big barnyard owls.
What if you got the bald eagle to turn?
See, now you're talking. But then they'd go get the harpy eagle and then it's all over. You ever seen the size of those things?
Yeah. They're awesome.
Yeah. I think that's the key. You got to go get one of those. Or, you know, you get the house cats or something. Get like the felines out there, start clawing some stuff.
Flying cats.
Animal wars.
All right, so that's urban falconry. Now that we've got a bit, Oregon is making national news on the owl front.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stick with the bird talk here.
Stay right here.
And the question is, should humans intervene to save a species of owl? Oh. So here's the thing. This story comes to us from Corvallis. Just down the road. Okay, I just gotta make sure I get this correct. There's this dude. His name's Dave.
Okay.
And he's got a gun.
Dave the dude.
He's got a gun. And he wants to shoot a barred owl. Barred owl.
All right.
Okay. So he sees a female.
Why does he want to shoot the owl?
The female's perched on a branch at just the right distance. He pulls the trigger and the owl fell to the forest floor.
Okay.
Okay, so now that owl carcass adds to a running tally of more than 2,400 barred owls killed so far in a controversial experiment by the U.S. government to test whether the northern spotted owl's rapid decline in the Pacific Northwest can be stopped by killing its aggressive East Coast cousin.
So the barred owl is killing the other owls?
Barred owls are from the east. They're
okay.
Like...
This again? What if this? What's like going on with these wars?
I know,
it's like,
man.
Tupac and Biggie.
I know. So I then out
no
west,
idea.
We have Tupac and, you know, the northern spotted owl.
Yeah.
So basically what they're doing is they're... Okay, so here's the deal. The federal government has been trying for decades to save the northern spotted owl. It's a native bird that sparked an intense battle over logging in Washington, Oregon, and California decades ago.
I'm not going to lie. When I look at the photos, I can't tell the difference between the two.
Yeah.
One's a little darker than the other one.
That's the spotted owl, right?
Yeah, the spotted owl is a little darker, but they, to be honest with you, they look like the same damn owl.
So now they're debating, should we be killing these owls to save the other owls? Like what's the point here?
It is odd. Yeah, but are they,
Well, the barred owl is the spotted owl's worst enemy. So they reproduce more often. Uh-huh. They have more babies per year, and they eat the same prey like squirrels and wood rats. And so they now outnumber spotted owls in many areas of the native bird's historic range. So they're taking over.
Yeah, but they don't kill the other owl. Isn't that kind of just let nature run its course?
That's kind of how I feel about it.
You know, the spotted owl needs to step its game up. Yeah, I don't feel like you should kill the barred owl simply because it's a cooler owl.
But that's what they're doing.
Interesting.
Yeah. Look, this is a last-ditch effort to see whether they can save the spotted owl.
Clearly the animal uprising. Look,
yeah, they're going to turn on us.
It's a matter of time, yeah. Right?
Ravens, owls.
You got wars in the skies, and now we're trying to intervene. We need to stay out of this.
Did you see the story of the tarantulas that are all coming up out of the earth in San Francisco to look for mates?
What?
Yeah. I'll get you that story in the club.
I tried to warn you. I saw this movie. Remember where the volcano spiders came up? That's where it started. Big fire-breathing tarantulas up from the ground, starring Edward Furlong.
Well, there is hot bird talk to wrap up today's version of In the News, October 15, 2019. All right, we got the Hot 5 at 5 coming up next. Several trades in the NFL. We'll get you caught up on this baseball game, which, it's already over. I kind of wanted to watch the bottom of the ninth.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance. You had a...
hot owl talk, and
look, there's gang wars
over.
Happening in the skies.
Look at that. Will you look at that? Look at that. Since May 27th, 25 starts.
19-0.
Gerrit Cole is 19-0.
With a 1.59 ERA.
Is that any good?
I think that's pretty good. The amazing part is he has, six games where he hasn't won.
Yeah, right. All right. We'll be back with the Hot 5 at 5 next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.